Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, November 18th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Stinging Nettle Apothecary, Main Street, Catskill, New York, offering handcrafted organic herb-based products, incorporating natural herbal remedies into daily life. StingingNettleNY.com. It's all about screening and prevention today. We welcome Dr. Mary Claire Abbott from Nuvance Health. Dr. Abbott is a family medicine doc, and with cold and flu season upon us, we'll talk about flu and respiratory illness prevention and treatment, as well as screening and prevention of diabetes, breast cancer, etc. Get your calls in early, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined today on this Medical Monday by Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of Nuvance Health. And, you know, it's the cold and flu season. A lot of viral illnesses out there. Today's topic will be screening and prevention. And since November is Diabetes Awareness Month, we'll talk about screening, treatment, and prevention of diabetes, also mammograms, etc. Dr. Abbott is a family medicine physician who provides full-spectrum outpatient care, including for children, adults, older adults, and pregnant people. If you want to be a part of the conversation today, give us a call at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or feel free to email your question to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
You made it up here. No problems with the drive up?
I did drive over the bridge in Albany unintentionally and then came back across.
Okay, well, you made it, and here you are, and we're very happy that you did make it. Tell us about your practice.
So I work at a primary care office in Kingston. It is a new Nuvance site. It is mostly, most of the providers are the family medicine residents. It's in a building with a few other specialties also, but specifically in our office, it's family medicine residents. And I am one of the attendings, so I do what's called precepting. I talk with the residents before each visit about who they're going to see and what the plan is. And then we discuss again after the visit or in the middle of the visit and go in and back to see the patient together or send them on their way.
So basically, you're bossing around a lot of residents.
Yeah.
And
well, we do it collaboratively.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I learn a lot from them and... yeah, they often know the patients better than I do. Well, I may know the guidelines and some of the medicine better. So it's really a team effort.
What's the peak time of year for you in your family medicine office? When do you see the most patients?
Very unpredictable.
Really?
No,
it's
yeah.
Not fall, winter, bad weather, and colds
no,
and flu and blah.
There's often like a rush at the end of the summer with kids getting their school entrance exams. But there are more walk-ins maybe during cold and flu season, but it's very unpredictable. Friday afternoons are hard for me because we get a lot of calls about last minute things, but that's not.
That happens.
Yeah.
It happens in every profession almost. The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott joins us from Nuvance Health today. You're passionate about screening and about prevention. And, you know, I don't know how you can't really screen or can you prevent a common cold or a flu? I guess you can. I mean, there's a flu shot, but is it effective this year?
So the flu shot this year compared to some other years is, I guess, less effective, but in terms of the percentage of hospitalizations that it will prevent, but it is still effective and can prevent, based on the data from South America, it seems like it will prevent about 35% of hospital admissions for flu. But we haven't had the flu here, so the exact efficacy is still unknown.
You mean we haven't had any flu here?
Yeah. I checked the website. New York State tracks reported flu cases, and there haven't been any yet for the season.
Well, that's really good news.
They will be here.
Of course. The number here is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Why do we have to look at the data from South America first?
Something about the tilt of the earth. And
Really? The toilets go the other direction?
Well, they've had, flu more recently in their communities. So, and then usually whichever strains of flu are there move up to the northern hemisphere. So that's what we're basing it on.
I find it fascinating that it's sort of a crapshoot, if you will. In other words, we think that this particular strain is going to be prevalent and we're going to make our vaccine focus on this, and science can get it wrong.
I guess so, but they're pretty good at it. I mean, to me, a 35% efficacy is still pretty good.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Can you silence your phone before the show starts?
Of course.
All right, fair enough.
But, it's not, it's really not a crapshoot. It's highly studied, and it's still the flu virus, so we know a lot about the flu virus. The particular strains change, but it's still the flu. So,
how are, and again, this is anecdotal information. This is only from your office, but how many people are getting the new COVID booster?
I don't have any numbers, really.
In your estimation, just sort of ballpark it.
A bunch, yeah. I mean, we have a lot of people that didn't realize that it was available that are getting it. Every day we give COVID boosters. There are some people that say, I had the original series and I'm not going to get an updated COVID shot. But there are others that never got that original series who are ready to do it now. So,
okay.
Yeah. And the recommendation is for everyone.
Of course.
To get it. My 2.5-year-old got it on Friday. And
the COVID. And the flu,
too? He got
the
COVID and the flu vaccine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You can get them both at the same time. And we have seen some COVID. It hasn't been as high recently as maybe a couple of months ago, but I'm sure that'll come back around too. We have seen a lot of other respiratory illnesses that we don't necessarily know the names of. They're just kind of colds.
Yeah. It's funny. A cold is basically a virus, right?
Mm-hmm. It is a virus. There's no virus that's called the cold, but
right.
A cold can, so it's be called a, by,
a group?
Can be caused by many
okay.
types of viruses.
But I mean, when are we going to get that? And I've had virologists on this show, and I've asked them that before. But when are we going to get that universal skeleton key that knocks all the viruses mm-hmm. down, all the flu, all
what
the
cold?
What
did they say?
Nothing. There's no answer to that.
Yeah.
The number here is 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. It's screening and prevention today with Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health. Obviously, mammograms, an important screening measure. What are some of the other things we should be screening for?
So depending on your age and some other risk factors, like whether or not you smoke or smoked in the past, there's screening for colon cancer, breast cancer, cervical cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer. And then there's also screening for a number of infectious diseases, hepatitis C, B, HIV. Those are recommended for all adults. So I guess kind of going back to what screening is these are...
That's a good start.
These are tests that we do... before there's any sign of a problem. So, so if you don't have any signs of infection or any symptoms, we would still test you for these infections. And similarly, if you don't have any symptoms of cancer or any concerns, we would still do the cancer screenings.
How important is it to have a full medical background of each patient? Are you making the calls on some of these screening measures?
Yeah, so a lot of most of the recommendations that I and we in family medicine follow come from the USPSTF, which is the United States Preventative Services Task Force. And that's an independent group that reviews all of the evidence and makes recommendations like what age do we start screening, what age do we stop, how often should it be done. So for some types of screening, it may be completely dependent on your medical history or your family history, like screening for the BRCA gene mutation for breast cancer. That would only be done if you had a significant family history, and we would need to know like specifically who that was. But for other things like mammograms, we don't really need to know much.
No, it's just age. But that age has changed over the years.
Yes. And yeah, even very recently it changed. So now the USPSTF is recommending screening at age 40.
That's very early, isn't it?
Well, as a 38-year-old, I would say yes. and the 40-year-old mark had been there previously from the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and some of the radiologic organizations. So 40 has been the starting age for a lot of people for a while. Now, the USPSTF and ACOG and...
What's ACOG?
American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology.
Aha, ACOG. I'll write that down.
They are all saying to start at 40. USPSTF says to do it every 2 years. Other organizations to say to do it every 1 year. So... you know, deciding exactly what's right for a particular patient may require knowing them better.
Let's take a quick break here. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott joins us from New Vance Health today. Screening and prevention. You want to talk about diabetes screening, mammograms, the flu, the vaccinations. Give us a shout. 800-348-2551 is the number, or VoxPop at WAMC.org. I can't help it. There's J.C. Styles on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's a Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. And we're joined by Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health. It's all about screening and prevention today. And Dr. Abbott, this is Diabetes Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an important time. And what messages are you trying to get out there to those who maybe never got screened for this?
See your doctor.
Yeah.
To figure out exactly like whether or not you should be screened, you should talk to someone who knows your history, your family history, can measure your height and weight. Those things impact your risk for diabetes, which then impacts whether or not you need to be screened.
So BMI is what we're talking about here?
Mm-hmm.
And why is that important?
People with a higher BMI have a higher rate of diabetes.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how you screen. The A1C to me is a very mysterious thing because if you have diabetes, you get the blood sugar stick that you stick your finger.
Mm-hmm.
But the A1C is different. Explain.
Yeah. So there are a few different things we look at when we're determining whether or not somebody has diabetes or if they do have diabetes, how well controlled it is. Finger stick that people do at home tells you like what is the sugar in this very moment, and that can change moment to moment and you know throughout the day and day to day. The A1C is the hemoglobin A1C, so that's looking at how much sugar basically is stuck to your red blood cells, and that is a measure of a 3 month span.
Can I stop you?
Yes.
Because I find this whole thing mysterious. A couple questions. One, when you stick your finger, that's blood and there's hemoglobin there, right? That's the red. Is that the red stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm not a doctor. So when you do the A1C, you're talking about a 3 month average of the sugar that sticks to the hemoglobin. Mm-hmm. How is that different?
Well, actually, the A1C can also be checked from a finger stick. So I don't want to confuse people about that any more than I have. So if you have a finger stick, if someone does a finger stick to look for diabetes, they might either be looking at an A1C or a blood sugar. And the blood sugar, as I said, this is a number that'll usually be, if it's more normal, between like 80 and the 180. But if people have diabetes, it might be in the 200s, 300s, or beyond.
Right.
The A1C uses a different scale. If your hemoglobin A1C is between or is above 6.5, that is diabetes.
Right.
There is a category between 5.7 and 6.5, which is pre-diabetes, which means that your blood sugars are higher than where we would like them to be. And most importantly, it means that you are at risk for developing full diabetes in the future. So if, depending on, you know, a number of factors, your doctor can check an A1C. They can also check a blood sugar, a fasting blood sugar, to screen for diabetes. We don't use that one as much in our office. And then there's another screening test where you can drink a sugary drink that has a very specific amount of glucose in it and then check your blood sugar afterward. But that's more time consuming. And
so what is it, like a Dr.
yucky.
Pepper or something? What is it?
Well, the one I had did taste a little bit like Sprite, but it's like very kind of syrupy.
I have not had that screening. It sounds good. Do they have a screening with beer by any chance? All right, let's go to the phones in a moment. We'll do one email here and then we'll go to the phones. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott is here from New Vance Health. Screening and prevention of, you know, we're talking about diabetes, breast cancer, and getting your flu shots and everything else. It's a wide open show today. Susanna in Bern writes in, every time I go to see my OB-GYN for yearly physical, besides the mammogram, she also requests an ultrasound since I have a dense breast tissue. Why isn't ultrasound the breast cancer prevention tool that is more accurate, less invasive, and less expensive? I always have to pay extra for the ultrasound.
Yes. So
now we're in billing questions. I forgot to tell you about that.
Mm-hmm. So the standard for screening for breast cancer is mammography, and mammography has improved, you know, year over year, and is good for detecting calcifications in the breasts. Some people who have very dense breasts, the mammogram can't penetrate as well to be able to get as much data. So some people have additional screening with ultrasound or MRI. It's a very kind of gray zone currently as far as who with dense breasts should have that additional imaging. And it depends on other risk factors, family history, often the radiologist will, at New Vance at least, they will give us a calculation of your lifetime risk of breast cancer. And based on that, if it's a very high risk, we would have you do additional imaging. But if you're at average risk with dense breasts, you don't necessarily have to have additional imaging. And then the other question is, will insurance cover it? Insurance will not pay for just a baseline screening ultrasound without other risk factors. I don't know exactly what, you know, the cost difference is, if that's what's driving them, usually is with insurance.
Before we get to the phones, do you find it annoying or does it make you less than jazzed that you have to deal with these business questions when health is ultimately on the line?
Yes.
And so there are people in your practice, presumably, who do most of this.
Yeah. I mean, I click a few buttons to, like, do a bill at the end of a visit, but I don't have to often get into all of the details. When I do, I find it to be very frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I will be on the phone with people from the insurance companies trying to convince them that a test is necessary sometimes, or changing medications based on what happens to be on the insurance formulary this month rather than last month.
You know, I never thought of this before, but when you're in medical school, is there a series of classes or a class where it's just about dealing with insurance and dealing with some of the business aspects of this?
I did have a class that dealt some with business aspects of medicine. I think it was more focused on, like, don't get sued or what to do when you do get sued. But I think I learned most of what I know, which I feel like isn't even that much about insurance, either by being a patient or just through residency and practice, having things denied and having to be in touch with insurance companies, which I still find to be pretty unpredictable.
It's not a lot of fun.
But I don't want to spend the whole hour complaining.
All right, fine. But you know what? All right, let's go to the phones then. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a question for Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Now we'll skip over to Matamoros, Pennsylvania, and it's Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
What about garlic and zinc for the prevention of flu and cold?
Zinc and garlic specifically. Yeah. All right, thanks, Jim.
Garlic, I have not read much good supporting evidence for, specifically for preventing colds. Although I do encourage using garlic in cooking because usually people then will use less salt, which is good. But zinc, there is some fairly good data. It's should be used basically topically. So zinc lozenges are my favorite, but I think there are some zinc sprays that you can use nasally or in your throat.
What does the zinc do specifically?
It decreases viral attachment. So it can shorten the length or severity of a cold. When my 2-year-old inevitably brings home a cold from daycare, I'll start using zinc lozenges, and seems to be pretty effective. A couple of things that I warn against with zinc are if you take zinc pills, they may make you nauseous. Even the lozenges can make you pretty nauseous, so make sure you've had something to eat. And then they can leave a pretty bad taste in your mouth. So don't use one like before your very expensive dinner.
All right. Hey, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott is our guest. But by the time you're feeling symptoms, isn't it too late for the zinc?
No. I mean, I like to start using it when I'm, you know, someone else in the house is sick and I have not started having symptoms. But even when you do have symptoms, there's some evidence that it will shorten the course and decrease symptoms.
Of any virus? Any viral illness? Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, were people slamming down zinc during the pandemic?
I don't know. I was mostly seeing people in the hospital during the pandemic. So at that point, zinc's not very useful.
Doesn't it seem like a horrible dream? Doesn't that couple, 2-3 year period just seem terrible?
Yeah.
I can't believe it. And it's amazing. It's a testament to the spirit of this country that people just got back to business. Mm-hmm. Are we too lax now?
No, I don't think so. I think people are a lot more careful about just colds in general and who may be at high risk for complications of viral illnesses. It is also really nice not to be limiting ourselves as much socially, especially thinking about like the holidays coming up and those first couple years of holidays were really hard.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't spend a lot of time with great grandma if I weren't feeling well. But in the absence of symptoms, I'm looking forward to seeing her.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Our guest is Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health. So you get a cold. You get a flu. You got it. I can go to the doc. I can go see Dr. Abbott. And I don't know what you can give me for drugs, but what about if you're at home? And, you know, my wife will say, oh, we're going to make homemade chicken soup. To me, this is like, okay, old wives' tales or whatever, but what do you do if you're at home to make your cold feel better or make your flu tolerable if you're mm-hmm. not going to the hospital?
Yeah, well, as long as you don't have any medical contraindications, you can use ibuprofen and other over-the-counter.
And what will that do?
That will help with body aches, headaches, sore throat.
Fever?
Fever, yeah.
It will. Mm-hmm. And how does it actually work on a fever? Does aspirin do the same thing on a fever as ibuprofen or Motrin or whatever?
Yeah, Motrin is one of the brands for ibuprofen. Advil also.
Tylenol is different stuff.
Tylenol is different. Aleve is another common NSAID like ibuprofen. And
will aspirin knock down a fever?
I think it will, but we don't use it so often anymore because it has more side effects on the GI system.
So just bleeding of the tummy?
Yeah. Speaking of prevention, the aspirin was something that we were recommending for a long time, and probably a lot of people are still taking.
Me. I take a baby aspirin every day.
Oh, yeah. So you can talk to your doctor.
It's not a good plan?
Well, it might be for you, but for... like when I was in training, we recommended it for a lot of people based on their risk factors. And now it's recommended less because of the concerns for bleeding complications. But getting back to what you could do at home for your cold.
Oh, yeah.
Chicken soup is good because it will keep you hydrated when you may not feel like eating.
The chicken fat has no magical powers, though. That's the question.
I mean, if it makes you happier, then that's
pretty... You know what? That's a cop-out. All right, fine. This email came in about cough drops. This is from Nate. I have hereditary angioedema. I'm always very careful. I always carry cough drops with me and all that stuff. I've been fighting this condition since 2013. What's hereditary angioedema?
That will cause like your lips and mouth and tongue to swell. And sometimes it can be quite dangerous if it's blocking your airway.
So what would a cough drop do?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Well,
And there are other over-the-counter medications that we'll give to people with angioedema, but I'm not sure what. There are so many different types of cough drops, so I'm not sure what they're using it.
Dr. Mary Claire Abbott is with us from New Vance Health, regretting her decision, no doubt. Let's go to the phones and Kathy in Buskirk. Kathy, you're on.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Hello.
Good.
Here's my question. I had about 8 years ago diagnosed with cancer. It was a very, very aggressive tumor. They did an oncotype test on it. And so they recommended the highest level doses of chemo for me as well as radiation. And prior to all of that, I was pre-diabetic. I kept it under control for like 15 years and so forth. They started me on the steroids and it went crazy. Mm-hmm. And then it never went back down. So now I am into full-blown diabetes and I've had to start on Ozempic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there's a connection between those two or not. And I'll give you another little clue here. My third chemo, the port didn't work. The nurse couldn't get the needle in, so the chemo went straight into my body. And I don't know if that would attribute to it either or not, but I just wondered if there's any documenting cases of diabetes being worse after these kind of treatments.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you went through a lot with that. It is very common for cancer treatment to include steroid treatments, which will increase your blood sugar. And for those people that already have pre-diabetes, you know, you were already at risk for developing diabetes, and there's some chance that that might have happened regardless of the treatments that you received for cancer. But yes, definitely the steroids would have played a role, and other, it depends on exactly which chemotherapies you had received, but inflammation in general and stress on the body can also contribute to development of other chronic diseases. So I can't say exactly if there was a link, but there's you know, a good chance that everything you went through contributed to your current state of health. Also thinking about it kind of in reverse, diabetes and high blood sugar will increase your risk of developing cancer. There's a list that was put out by, I think it's the American Cancer Society, for things that you can do to help prevent cancer. I mean, not all cancers are preventable, but some are. And on their list is to maintain a healthy weight, limit alcohol consumption. Both of those things will also help keep blood sugar under control. Eating a diet that includes a lot of vegetables and whole grains. And then other things that are not as clearly linked to blood sugar, but avoiding tobacco use. There is some evidence that smoking can increase your risk of diabetes, and there is definite evidence that it will increase your risk of cancer.
I'm very anti-smoking. Not a problem for me.
Excellent.
All right, Kathy, we got to take a break here, but thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. WAMC.org is our website where you can listen online. But you're listening now. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back with Dr. Mary Claire Abbott in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. We're joined by Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Now, this email came in from John. Last time I donated blood, they checked my hemoglobin non-invasively. What is this gadget? Is there a home version? And that's from John in Poughkeepsie.
I'm not sure what he means by I don't know what test it was.
You have to get some blood to do it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, usually it's a finger prick. I think you can buy them. I don't know. I haven't seen it at the pharmacy, although I did see I think they have an A1C at-home finger stick that you can do. I wouldn't really recommend doing that because making changes that are going to have a 3-month impact is probably something you should do with your physician. But if that's what you mean, you probably can buy them online. If it was a finger prick hemoglobin, they can check.
To me, that's invasive, by the way.
That was my hesitation. So I'm not quite sure if I'm answering the question or not.
Right. The number here is 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Screening and prevention on a whole range of topics today with Dr. Mary Claire Abbott. Well, you mentioned on the show a little earlier, you're a mom and you're also a doc. Are doctors who are parents more paranoid than perhaps those of us who aren't? Because my wife and I, the first couple kids, were every little thing, we're, oh my God, it's the end of the world. Are you more laid back about little illnesses with your young one, or are you more nervous?
I think I'm more laid back. I'm not sure how much of that is because I'm a physician. I think that's generally true, though, that we have seen, you know, what a really sick kid looks like. So to see a kind of sick kid is much less concerning, and we know that they'll be okay.
But the first kid is always the recipient of so much stress from the parents on 100 levels.
Mm. And by the that's why he's third, so grouchy, I
by
guess.
By the third, fourth kid, it's no problem. Fifth kid, very mellow indeed. You mentioned the BRCA gene earlier with regard to breast cancer. How do we do genetic tests? How is that done?
There are a few different ways. Some of the genetic tests can be done through saliva samples. Often it's done through blood tests.
Yeah.
I mean, the the details of it, I would not be very good at explaining.
Okay, fair enough. It'll take up the whole show.
What happens in the lab once the sample is received.
Why is it we don't have genetic tests for all cancers?
That is something that is being worked on. It's just something that's not understood very well still. One other place where we do use DNA in screening is for colon cancer screening. The colonoscopy for a long time has sort of been thought of as the gold standard.
Yeah.
And then there's something called a FIT test, which looks for blood in your stool that can't be seen by the naked eye. And now there's something kind of in between, which looks both at blood in the stool, but also at DNA in the stool. So there are certain DNA mutations that are associated with colon cancer. So it's not really, it's not the same as genetic testing, but it is a use of DNA in screening.
We're joined by Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health today. Number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to South Windsor, Connecticut. Steve, you're on.
Yes, hi. I thought I remembered hearing a while back, or you were talking a few minutes ago about the use of zinc in treating colds. I thought I remember hearing a while back about the connection between zinc and loss of smell. So I just did a search, and I'm looking online right now, actually from a site, it's a Mayo Clinic site. And I'll read two sentences to you, and then I'll be done.
Mm-hmm.
It says, evidence suggests that if zinc lozenges or syrup is taken within 24 hours after cold symptoms start, the supplement can help shorten the length of colds. However, use of intranasal zinc has been linked with the loss of the sense of smell, in some cases long-term or permanently.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
That's from the Mayo Clinic.
I don't know that the nasal spray is very widely used at this point. I think it is available online, but I haven't seen it in a drugstore. And definitely, I would have. You're not supposed to use the nasal spray in children. The lozenges, they do definitely impact your taste, but generally more short term.
Okay. All right. Well, Steve, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. It's Dr. Mary Claire Abbott today. Let's go to Red Hook. Kevin, you're on.
Yes, how you doing today?
Hello.
Hey, I'll just clarify. You had a caller who called about the who donated blood in the non-invasive blood stick.
Yep.
And that is true what they did. I just donated Friday's American Red Cross, and they put like a band on your thumb, and somehow that does it for you. So there is no more blood stick or anything like that. It's the first time I've ever seen it. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
A lot more enjoyable.
there's something, I'm not sure exactly what the science behind it is, but for a long time they have done non-invasive testing for bilirubin in infants. So I imagine it's something similar. It may be specifically possible with hemoglobin because of the color, and that's an aspect of it with bilirubin also.
Mm. Kevin?
Yeah, I liked it. I had no idea. I was just pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'll have to look
it up.
I'll
leave it at that.
That's cool. Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. You know, I've had oxygen sensors on my finger, and they're not sticking any holes in my finger.
Right, yep.
And the hemoglobin, they're counting just the red corpuscles? What are they counting?
The hemoglobin.
Okay.
There's a separate count for like the number of red blood cells.
Okay. So hemoglobin is a component of red blood cells?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yes.
This is exciting. I'm learning a lot. 800-348-2551, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Mary writes in, hemoglobin, me too. Here's the info. The American Red Cross uses the OrSense finger cuff to measure hemoglobin levels without drawing blood. The OrSense finger cuff is a ring-shaped sensor that fits around the thumb and measures hemoglobin levels pulse rate, oxygen, saturation levels in under a minute.
That's great.
Isn't that
Hopefully
something?
Hopefully we'll have that at more primary care practices soon.
Speaking of primary care, why did you go that route when there are a lot of specialties doctors sometimes branch off and do neurology or whatever mm-hmm, else? Mm-hmm. What drove you to family care?
I didn't really want to give anything up.
What do you mean?
Like, I thought for a long time about going into OBGYN or pediatrics, but the thought of not seeing male patients or not seeing adult patients was sad. So with family medicine, we're able to see a much wider range. We can also see families, which I think contributes to the patient and doctor relationship, getting to know both the parent and the child together, I think gives some insight into each person's health on top of kind of knowing them individually.
I think that there is a special place in heaven for all pediatricians. It's got to be very, very difficult indeed. So you're a family doc, and you're going the entire generational span of a family. A number here is 800-348-2551. We talked about mammograms earlier in the show, and you said that the current ACOG, or was it something else, said 40 is when you... No, it wasn't. It was the other...
They both say 40 now.
Okay. What's the upper limit?
Yeah. So this is an area where it is really important to talk to your physician. The sort of general recommendation is up to 75 years old. But if you are a very healthy 75-year-old, you may want to continue beyond that. And similarly, if you're someone who has a lot of illnesses and a pretty short life expectancy, you may decide that you don't want to go through a mammogram at a younger age.
And at a certain point, I mean, if you're 80, 85, you've got a pretty short life expectancy anyway. Mm-hmm. At what point do you say, yeah, skip it?
So a lot of what we do now in primary care for prevention and screening and just generally is shared decision making. So talking to patients and families about kind of what their values are, what's important to them, and then providing kind of the data and context to help them make a decision.
Does that help outcomes? In other words, most people ain't that bright. And so when the doctor says, well, let's make a group decision, the doctor knows best, don't you think?
That's what some people think.
No, but you don't think so.
Not always. Yeah. And even like for prostate cancer screening, now the official recommendation is to do shared decision making because it is so complicated. You know, we think often of like prevention and screening as being things that maybe don't have a lot of risk associated with them.
Yeah.
Because it's not like we're giving you a medication. We're just doing a test. But even the tests themselves have risk beyond just like, ouch, it hurt to give blood.
Right.
The results may be falsely positive or falsely negative, create a lot of anxiety where it wasn't really founded.
Okay. Keep going if you wish. But my next one was going to be about these false positives mm-hmm. because many a family provider will say, okay, listen, you don't want to go in for your colonoscopy. You're going to poop in a box. But as I understand it, and do you guys prescribe those sometimes too?
The poop.
Cologuard.
Cologuard.
That's
yep.
it. But it escaped me.
Yeah.
But you'll get a lot of false positives, won't you? And you'll still have to go for the colonoscopy. Why not skip the middleman?
Yeah, I mean, that's an option. A lot of people decide to go straight for the colonoscopy. But for others, you know, the discomfort of doing the prep, fear of anesthesia, or if they have other comorbidities that might make it more dangerous, would mean that they'd rather just do the Cologuard for now and then make another decision if there's a positive result, or which would mean an abnormal result with the Cologuard.
And the accuracy is within the realm that you would consider to be okay?
Yeah, I mean, in general, for a screening test to be recommended, it has to have kind of meet certain parameters for it's sensitive enough to detect, in this case, we're talking about cancer, but also won't produce too many false positives.
Right.
And the Cologuard has met those criteria to be mm-hmm. used very broadly. For a while, its use was limited more by insurance than anything else, but there is more coverage now.
All right, a couple more minutes to go with Dr. Mary Claire Abbott of New Vance Health. You can squeeze in if you need a call, 800-348-2551. About every year I get blood work. I think most people do, right, when they go in for their yearly. We see the A1C and things like that, but there are other things that they're screening for, proteins and all these other things I don't understand. What are some of these other things that they are screening for when they do blood?
This is something we talk a lot about with our residents, because a lot of the things that are kind of commonly accepted as quote unquote annual blood work, there's not a lot of evidence behind.
Oh.
If you're a healthy person with no symptoms, you may not actually need all of the tests that are kind of common. But some of the tests that you might qualify four would be getting screening cholesterol testing. You know, generally people can't feel if their cholesterol is high. So this is a good place where a screening test comes into play, because we can get some information before you have any symptoms or issues like a heart attack. So usually that should be started around when you're 40 years old, looking at cholesterol. If you have other risk factors like elevated BMI, then you may need it to be done sooner. The other blood tests that are kind of the standard screening are the ones we had mentioned before, looking for hepatitis C, mm-hmm. Hepatitis B, but those don't necessarily have to be done annually unless you are high risk for a new infection.
Dr. Mary Claire Abbott, we only have about a minute left here. Diabetes Awareness Month. We've talked about that. Is there anything we left out here while we were taking calls and emails and such? Anything that you want to bring up in the last 45 seconds?
Well, there's still a lot of prevention and screening that we didn't touch on. I guess one thing kind of within diabetes is that if you have diabetes, there are other complications of diabetes that you should be screened for annually. Looking for kidney problems, nerve problems, and eye problems.
How do you screen for nerve problems?
We have a little plastic, almost looks like a needle, but it's plastic and not as sharp as a needle. And we'll have you close your eyes and prick the bottom of your foot with it, and you tell us where we're pricking.
But I mean, you could just step on their foot, right?
That if you couldn't feel that, then you would have very advanced nerve disease. But this is able to pick it up before people really notice that it's a problem.
All right. Well, we're about out of time here. Dr. Mary Claire Abbott, great to have you on the show. How do people find out more about your practice?
You can call. You can go online. It's New Vance Primary Care. There are a couple of primary care offices in Kingston. We are located at the Kingston Medical Mall. Which is a great new renovated facility that has a number of other specialties in the building, as well as radiology and a lab.
Well, thanks for making the drive all the way from Kingston. We couldn't be happier. Have a safe drive back, and thanks. Have a great holiday.
Thank you. Nice to talk with you.
Support comes from CHP Berkshires. Medical and dental care at practice locations in the Berkshires, now offering the 2025 COVID vaccine for all ages on CHP mobile clinics on the road. CHPBerkshires.org. Thanks again to Dr. Mary Claire Abbott for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phone screened by Bob Rathbun. Thanks, Bob. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Cars with Gordon Fricke. I think the last time Gordon was supposed to be on, we were in a fun drive. So it's been a couple of months. You probably got a lot of problems with your Wankel rotary engine. We'll deal with that at 2 tomorrow.